Daily Detroit is brought to you by the community. Support our work at patreon.com/dailydetroit.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your Daily Detroit for Monday, August 24th, 2026. I am JR Stays, coming to you from our studio at Tech Town. And normally, I don't put a timestamp on these things, but because, well, everything's just moving very quickly, I want to mention that we're recording this episode at about 12:45 in the afternoon. And joining me to do it is none other than Glenn Stevens, the executive director of Mish Auto at the Detroit Regional Chamber. We're going to be talking about all of this tariff situation, which, Glenn, first off, welcome back to the show. But second, what on earth is happening?
Great to be here, Jer, on a very tumultuous day in the Canada-U.S. relationship. Well, we thought we had a deal last Friday. In fact, all signals so far developed that the Canadian Prime Minister asked each of the premiers to put American liquor back on the shelves. I mean, that's how far it had developed in a positive way. And then something happened Friday night, and we woke up Saturday morning, and the thing had blown up. And we're pretty much in a full-scale trade war at this point on a Monday morning.
It feels like this is so disconcerting because I feel like we've kind of been here before, and then it like went from the news, but a lot of things changed, and then we're back here again, and there's just so much uncertainty. What I do know, is that all of this has increased the prices on Michiganders especially, and also hurt Michigan jobs.
Right, and that is because our two countries are intertwined from a trade perspective, but Michigan and Ontario, and other parts of Canada, but certainly Ontario, are interdependent. And as you know, parts move back and forth daily from the auto industry, but agriculture, lumber, energy, fertilizer products, it's all traded back and forth. $70 billion between Ontario and Canada and Michigan every year. So yeah, this is a very difficult situation because it wasn't that long ago that we had free trade with Canada, about a year and a half ago. And now we are in all kinds of tariffs have layered up. And you know, we've been trading for 300 years with that province next to us, before it was a country, before we were a country, and certainly in the automotive industry, we've been trading with them for 125 plus years.
So what led us up to this situation this time?
So there's a lot of things going on. There have been a stacking of tariffs through different mechanisms by the administration, steel and aluminum early on, other policies, other trade acts have been used. A lot of it was reversed by the Supreme Court in the spring. We anticipated more tariffs be put on place. And that's what happened about a month ago. The Trump administration used an act that's never been used before from the 30s called the Smoot-Hawley Act to tariff 50% tariff on about $20 billion of new Canadian goods. That's what they were really trying to iron out last week to avert this new tariff taking place. And it all leads up to USMCA, too. It all ties together, but there are separate things going on.
Now, forgive me. I did take some economics classes. I don't remember my teacher talking fondly about Smoot-Hawley as a concept.
No, as I noted a minute ago, it's not been used. And if it was an effective tool which could stand the test of time and legally, it would have been deployed more. And, you know, it's already being challenged by businesses that are impacted by it. But it is at the crux of what has transpired in the past week and what broke down on Friday. And that was one step that was being negotiated. But since it broke down, the Canadians walked away from the table. They have threatened to retaliate on September 8th with their own tariffs. And then today, President Trump threatened to raise the tariffs which are already in place. So it's not de-escalating, it's going the opposite.
Well, and it seemed like that there was a deal in place, but I've read multiple reports now that near the end of the negotiating cycle, that there were a number of requests by the Trump administration, especially around cultural issues that were unrelated specifically to the auto trade or something like that. Things like demanding that the Canadians stop some of their investment in their own arts and culture and film and streaming services, like a number of things that seemed to be not connected to what was originally talked about.
None of it fully substantiated, but Prime Minister Carney referred to it. And he's pretty sharp, and he's been through this, and he's not going to speak out about something that didn't happen. So there was certainly some cultural questions by our administration. There were automotive changes to tariffs, and I'm sure there were things on both sides. But again, last week they stood together, Ambassador Greer and Trade Commissioner LeBlanc from Ontario or from Canada, and said we have a deal, and now we don't. In fact, like as I said, we're going in the opposite direction.
So how does this uncertainty, because we don't know what's actually going to happen as we record this, right? There's timelines in the future. There's a lot of loud talking right now. There's so many things, whether it's heightened percentages, the possibility theoretically that Canada could put like export taxes on things like fuel that we're very dependent on. What does this uncertainty mean on the ground for us here in Michigan and Michigan companies?
Well, let's stack it up. First of all, from a business perspective, whether it's a small business that's being impacted by tariffs or a large multinational business like an OEM, automotive company, they're faced with the overall general uncertainty. So pulling a lever on a major investment, moving production, things like that, you're not going to do that in an unstable environment with that huge uncertainty word out there. Secondly, input costs have gone up. Tariffs are taxes. Somebody's got to pay them. The importer of record, the company bringing that product into a country, wherever it comes from, is going to pay a tax on that. A company can do one of two things with that, absorb that or pass it along to the consumer. So input costs are up and the consumer is feeling it. So that also ultimately could potentially lead to a company deciding, I can't make a go of this or I have to cut back. And that's a job. Those are jobs. And so it's a cascade effect that has really not had much positive at this point.
Well, you know, there's even disagreements among friends often, right? And I mean, it's not like there hasn't been negotiations between the United States and Canada in the past. But when it comes to this specific situation, I feel like there could be longer term implications if we don't figure out a way to handle this. This posture worries me because the automotive business is a global thing. Right. Whether or not we want to accept that it is, the fact, at least in my understanding, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that this is a global market. What I worry about is as a country, if we do things in a way that are perceived as unreliable, our longtime allies might look at other friends. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I specifically think about is, all right, well, if we pull out of Canada, there's still a lot of plants that are going to be left there. Mm-hmm. What if another automaker from China or someone else says, hey, you know what? We'll employ your people. You just got to sell the cars we build there. You got to sell in Canada. I think about those ways that our automakers could be losing market share, profits, and ending up with jobs here in Michigan as well, because this is all tied together. It feels like to me, a lot of this conversation pretends that we're in another decade than we are.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, again, as I referred, our countries and our companies here are intertwined, particularly in automotive. Let's focus on that. I mean, you've got trucks built in Ontario from Ford and GM, where the transmissions come from Ohio, the axles come from Michigan, and the engines come from Windsor. And it's a very connected supply chain. If we don't have that in Canada or those plants become some other type of company, like a Chinese company, there's no win for us there. The Canadian market is substantial. It's not huge. It's nowhere near our market, but it is a substantial market. And their trade partners and their automotive design, engineering, and assembly partners of ours. So, yeah, there's some longer-term ramifications there. Look, we know why the administration has done what they did. We know from January 20th of 2025, the America First Trade Policy Act came out, what the intent was, secure the borders, get rid of the trade deficit or as much as we can and reindustrialize while we're building national security. I mean, no one would argue with those fundamental things. It's just been way too bumpy along the way, and now it's just not being done together. And we should be doing things together. Canada has access to critical minerals among their natural resources that we need. If they walk away from that, that's something we're isolated from too. So, I mean, I could go on, but I think we're on the same page with regards to that.
Now, in theory, given enough time and theoretical investment, could the United States backfill all these gaps over time? Do we have the talent? Do we have the people? Is that like a reasonable ask?
The ultimate goals of, you know, maybe some of the administration's pretty ambitious goals for reindustrialization would be really difficult because because of the talent. I mean, you have to have talent, and we need immigration reform. We needed it before the current administration, and certainly the one before. We need people, and we're not a growth rate country. Michigan's not a birth rate country growth either. We need people, so that goes with it. So there are constraints on people, on capital, to be able to literally do as much as you'd like to do. Certainly we can grow manufacturing here and expand it, but we need trade partners like Canada and Mexico as a trade bloc to be able to compete and to be able to do business and move different parts and components across sectors together.
Now, there's a term I've heard, Fortress America. How does that impact our automakers? Does it impact them positively, negatively? What does it change for them in what seems to be a global market for cars?
Yeah, it depends on the company. Now, and remember, it's not just GM, Ford, and Stellantis. There are also a lot of other companies that build vehicles here. Toyota, Hyundai, Honda, Mercedes, Volkswagen, Rivian, Tesla. So it impacts them as well. And so could we build capacity here and increase capacity here? Yes. In fact, we have seen some moves. We've seen some product be brought back from Mexico. Ford has indicated they're going to bring some vehicles back from China. So we have that capacity to do that. And those are win-wins. But again, what we're talking about here today is that relationship with Canada, where there are cross-border vehicles, components that move back and forth, and a supply chain that has worked tariff-free, by the way, for quite some time, for 125-plus years. And that's at jeopardy. And unraveling that doesn't make sense.
So what are you looking for from your seat? What would you like to see happen going forward? And what should listeners be thinking about?
So I'd like to see some of the goals that were set forth by the administration when it took office, and that is to grow manufacturing in this country, but also R&D and research and engineering. That's what we need in Michigan for growth here. But we want to do it with Canada, not at the expense of Canada. And that's what we want to see. We see ourselves as a trade bloc stronger together with Canada and Mexico, and that a strong USMCA agreement can work for all of us, but it also can help us compete on a global stage against, for example, China.
So what are we looking for next? Is it a waiting game? Is it, from your perspective at Mish Auto, what are you and the people you work with thinking about right now?
Well, we hope they get back to the table. I mean, that flat out is the number one objective here, is for them to get back to the table and hammer this out and iron these things out and then take that step towards negotiating a stronger USMCA. That's the path we were on. That's the path we need to get back on. And yes, we're communicating with Lansing. We're communicating with our federal delegation. But this happened on a weekend, and it blew up rather quickly because it was in place. The president posted about it. The trade commissioners stood together. Liquor was going back on the shelves in Canada. And
really?
Prime Minister Carney. And by the way, I didn't know this, but each province makes that decision on their own. So there's 13, including the territory. So each premier makes that decision on their own. But Prime Minister Carney asked them to make that decision on Thursday. And here we are completely in a different place from that.
Wow. That's interesting. And, you know, you mentioned that. It's funny because I think about state liquor laws. There's so many things that are similar between the two of us, you know. And for me personally, I find it difficult because I know so many family members and people that I know and listeners of the show, they're across borders. Their families across borders. There's marriages across borders. We just opened that beautiful Gordie Howe Bridge.
We did.
And it just, for me personally, it just feels so nonsensical to be in this place. Like over the weekend as I was following this stuff, and I'm really glad that you made the time to come out, Glenn. I'm just, it's almost disorienting.
Well, it is discouraging because those are not just our trade partners across the straits here. Across the river, those are our friends and neighbors. You know this. There are thousands of healthcare workers that come across every day from Windsor into work in our hospital systems. We play sports against each other. We have entertainment districts mutually. I grew up playing hockey in the UP. I went to hockey school in Toronto every year. I played a lot of Ontario hockey, and I have friends there. I have relatives there. And so for us, it's very personal, and I think we're way closer to the action than they are in D.C. and other parts of the country because of the relationships we build and the friendships we build over so many years.
Well, yeah, and I read that Michigan and Maine are the two states that would be the most impacted, among others like Wisconsin and many others. But Michigan, Maine are really in the crosshairs of all this stuff.
Yeah, there's $900 billion of trade done between the U.S. and Canada every year, and 70 of that is between Michigan and Canada. So it's an outsized, it's the, you know, we've got four bridges now and two tunnels, and they work every day to move commerce and they move people, including tourism and trade and travel. And by the way, that's been hurt too.
I think I saw somewhere a statistic about down about 27%.
Yeah. I mean, I just coming off the travel commissions. I've served on that for 4 years. And that has been a huge topic that we just haven't seen our friends and neighbors here as much as we should. And I can't blame them. They're angry right now. They're very frustrated and they're very unified right now.
Well, that's one thing I think about with this whole thing. For people who maybe are listening to this and you're not from Michigan or you're not as familiar with all this stuff. I mean, literally, we could take a bus down to the riverfront, take a baseball and chuck it across the river almost, right?
Right.
We're so close. It's something that I think for the rest of the country who doesn't know how integrated this stuff is and how close we are. And I mean, sure, we fought a war in 1812. But outside of that, I mean, whether it was, you know, trade, whether it's tourism, all that stuff, it's all interdependent in so many ways. You know, we talked about autos, we're talking about tourism. I think about development, Canadian lumber, those kind of resources, stuff that we just don't do as much here in the United States. And products Canada has that, honestly, we don't. I was looking into it. I didn't know this. There's like different kinds of lumber that grow differently in different areas
Absolutely.
Of North America. It's all kind of stuff where if you dig into it and you go, well, America this or that, it's like, why can't it be America and us together? It just, this one, I understand like a use for tariffs in certain places, but this one and the way it's rolled out too has just been, it's just been befuddling for me.
Yeah. And I can feel it from you right now. And I think you can probably feel it from me. We're perplexed, but we also, it's personal to us because right across that border, how many people do you know have walked across the bridge in the last couple of weeks, biked across the bridge? I mean, people are loving both sides. We got people biking across from Canada to go to our restaurants in Southwest. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. We want more of that. But when the countries are at odds from the leadership perspective, it does filter down. And so I think we, from a business standpoint, we know that input costs are up. It's affecting employment. It's affecting prices. But again, for us, it's very personal because it's just across the river and friends and neighbors.
Yeah. And I guess my thought is to not underestimate the pushback that Canadians can offer, even though they're economically smaller. When a group feels, I keep hearing elbows up. Is the term. It's a hockey term for fighting.
Right.
People will deal with, and we've seen this across the world, honestly, people will deal when they feel like they're under threat. They'll deal with a lot of inconvenience and a lot of difficulty if they feel like they're being wronged.
Yeah, and they do feel like they're being wronged. But I will underscore again, I said it earlier, it does go both ways. There are trade issues that we want worked out too.
For sure.
From our perspective, but I read something last night that the Canadians are willing to wait the administration out until it's out of office. That's hard to fathom because the pain would be pretty hard to their economy. It's not humming along real great right now. And then again, like, as you said earlier, it could force them to other trade partners, which that doesn't do us any good and probably in the long term might help them, but it's a long road to be able to get to there. The best thing that could happen is if we have a trading agreement that works well for us, because that's the closest and the best thing that will increase investment on both sides of the border between both of us.
Yeah, there's absolutely important things that need to be discussed. And it seemed like that they were. It seemed like we were making progress.
They certainly were.
And as I said, friends often have disagreements, and that's okay. It's when you let the disagreements make people turn into enemies, which I don't think we're enemies yet, but that... That trade war, it doesn't feel good.
No, I mean, I do feel strongly and I'm optimistic because that's the way I am, that they're going to get back to the table and hammer it out. At the same time, it's causing a lot of angst and a lot of divisiveness. And the fact is that a little over a year and a half ago, free trade, products going back and forth, talking about investment together, and now we're using two words with Canada, our closest trading partner, that I never thought I'd hear, trade war. And that's hard to wrap your head around.
Well, if listeners have questions, let me know. DailyDetroit@gmail.com or 313-789-3211. You've got family on either side of the border. Are you somebody? I know we have listeners that work on both sides of the border. If this is something that concerns you, I want to know about it. And of course, what kind of details do you want to know about? I'm looking to serve you. Glenn Stevens, the executive director of Mish Auto at the Detroit Regional Chamber. Thank you so much. It's good to see you. Hopefully next time under better circumstances.
I hope so too, Jared. It's always good to be with you. I love your show and keep up the great work, man.
Hey, thanks. Well, thank you for listening to Your Daily Detroit. Thank you to our members on Patreon, patreon.com/DailyDetroit. Our local fearless coverage can only happen with your support. Become a member starting at just $3.13 a month. We would really appreciate it. Local media needs local support to survive and thrive. With that, I'm Jer Stays. We'll be back in your podcast apps tomorrow. Take care of each other, and we'll see you around Detroit.